Hello and welcome to Earth Heart Network Radio, the land-to-mouth food farm and garden edition that comes your way every Wednesday live at 1 p.m. We are so glad to be here with you, a beautiful sunny spring day. Of course, we've had a gorgeous spring unfolding here in the mountains of western North Carolina, and more blooms to come every day. New flowers coming out, of course, green leaves returning all over the mountains, the greening up of the mountains is happening. We even have a local Greening Up the Mountains festival in Silva, and what a glorious sight to behold. A great day to you. Hope you're doing well. We'll be hearing from Patrick Battle later in the hour for This Week in the Garden. And if you've ever got questions, you can always email Pat at livingwebfarms.org and we'll answer it on the show. It's really fun to get that expert advice and lots of seasoned years of organic gardening information. So do that if you have a question for this great springtime, mega turbo blasting, super busy gardening time season of the year. It's really when it's fun to get out all those seeds again. And frankly, I've got to go through and reorganize my seeds. I think I've gotten them rather mixed up over last season, and get them out, get organized, fill in the blanks, get new plants, and getting out there with the soil. You know, dancing and gardening can cut your risk for Alzheimer's in half. Those two things alone are so beneficial. And gardening being right up there with some of the best thing you can ever do with your time, there are actually microbes in the soil that are mood uplifters and basically antidepressants that help us regulate our mood and enjoy more peaceful, happy times. Actually, microbes that do that, you know, that fresh soil smell when you're out there in the garden, that's actually a wonderful, beneficial antidepressant that nature provides just by being in the garden. Another great benefit of being out there. Yes, we connect all the dots here, food farming, gardening, health, wellness, the relationship of that to the planet, both on a personal and global scale, and how we can do more to bring more gardens out there, to sequester more carbon, to create a sustainable culture we can all share and celebrate through living in conscious relationship with the world around us. And, you know, one of the fun things about spring is that you get to see all the new greens coming out, all these wild edibles and fun foods that we get to share. Ramps are sprouting. We've got different things like chickweed, of course, that are usually abundant in the garden. That's Stellaria media. Yes, you can make all kinds of things with that, even a chickweed pakora. I made that the other day. You can make chickweed smoothie. You know, you can add that. You can do lots of different things with it. Also, stinging nettles are out there. You cook those just right. You can make a nettle pesto, all kinds of things. We were talking about a nettle gnocchi last week, sort of a potato with a little stinging nettle cooked into that. Lamb's quarters, of course, is a big, big one. Recognize it by that little pearlized surface and that goose-footed shape. But pick them when they're young and tender, and you will have a delicious asparagus-like, rich, spinachy green that is just very delightful. It grows all over the place. Keep an eye out for that tasty spring edible. You can make anything from just steaming it, sauteing it with other vegetables. There's also great recipes for things like a creamy lamb's quarter soup. Quite nice there with butter and onion and a little bit of flour and richening up that stock and making some nice soups with that. So get out there and make it a point to forage for some local greens that are preferably in a way from a roadway if possible, but get out there and rinse those things off and enjoy super fresh right from your own yard or garden. Wonderful spring plants. It's that time of year. It helps slough off that winter sluggishness. It helps get rid of that cabin fever and put that spring back in your step and lighten up and detoxify a little bit. And that's what spring is all about, growing new life, new energy, and new directions. It's always fun to be able to share gardening information with people around the world, and we're so happy to have tons of responses coming in from people watching all the great videos on livingwebfarms.org regarding growing food sustainably, cooking, fermenting, you name it. It's many different aspects, from diverse cover crops to regenerative ranching. So many topics out there, something for everyone. And I encourage you to explore and share that great educational resource. And, you know, the more we spread our wings and cross-pollinate in community and share the information that's out there, the more we get inspired and the more we get information that empowers us and helps uplift us out there in our little goals and things we're doing. And it's so wonderful to see communities coming together to support each other and nature, like my little town here of Black Mountain. Yes, Black Mountain, North Carolina, a charming, quaint, artistic town here in the mountains, famous for that for many, many years. Buckminster Fuller used to hang around here in Black Mountain a long time ago, along with a lot of wonderful and magical artists who are still here, I have to say, a great artistic population here in Black Mountain. But we have a brand new migration meadow happening for the town of Black Mountain. Yes, unsung monarch heroes are out there getting heralded by monarchrescue.org. And Emily Sampson of Black Mountain, along with the town here in North Carolina, has a new milkweed meadow thanks to the hard work of the unsung monarch hero Emily Sampson. Emily, head grower of Painter's Greenhouses, has long been a native plant advocate and wildlife enthusiast, but these passions most recently moved her to action in Black Mountain, where she has initiated a project with the help of the town to establish a milkweed meadow in the greenway system here. So it started about 2 years ago. Her and her daughter were driving home from a dentist appointment one afternoon. They noticed a flurry of monarchs flying overhead and realized that she was witnessing part of the migration. So they wanted to find a safe place to stop and watch. So they exited and found a wide grassy area that was part of the disc golf course along the greenway there in Black Mountain. So they saw at least 300 of them flying through the valley about 30 feet in the air, and they returned year after year. And we're trying to help, you know, maintain and expand part of that habitat, because that's what they need. They realized that the butterflies were looking for food, and there wasn't some food at one point. They decided it was time to convert some of that grass into pollinator habitat to help support the monarch migration. It is at risk of collapse, and every single effort to help them is important. Getting back more of the habitat that's been lost, and also reestablishing areas as habitat for monarchs that aren't being used for that currently. So, you know, a childhood interest can grow into a career, as it has with Emily. She is really getting out there, being part of the outdoors, and really wants to be more in touch with nature, doing great things to help other people be part of that and spreading this knowledge. So wonderful to hear. We've got all kinds of things being donated there by Painter's Greenhouses, kindly donating hundreds of nectar plants. And Emily purchased native wildflower meadow seed with funding from the town and Parks and Rec Department. Our mayor here, Mike Sobel, was among those who showed up to help get the meadow going that day. And there was some nice signage donated for passersby. And now they're just waiting for the spring to witness the germination of all these efforts. And we're going to be seeing more pollinator habitats springing up the more we inspire each other to plant them in our own gardens, right? Make a pollinator farmscaping little habitat zone for insect biodiversity in your own garden, and interplant lots of those types of plants with your other vegetable crops, and it will help the pollination. It will help the biodiversity, and the more native species that you can plant, the more native insects you'll have. So wonderful ways to be inspired by these great efforts going on in Black Mountain, and really looking at that beautiful symbol of butterflies, transformation, of being uplifted. You know, yesterday was such a blessed day in the garden, even just for a moment. You walk out there, and I saw a butterfly I haven't ever seen ever in my life. And it was spectacular. Fortunately, we have a little touch of footage of this thing, small little video of this amazing creature. Of course, nothing compares to being right there up close. But there are so many wonders in nature. And when we start planting and cultivating loving space for nature to unfold, it will show up in all its glory. And what a great time to do that in spring in the garden. So thanks, Emily, and all the great work for establishing the new migration meadow here in Black Mountain. And you know what? I have to go see this. I can't wait when the migrations really start. Now, a friend of mine did say she saw a monarch the other day already, but I haven't seen a monarch. I've seen a few butterflies, some swallowtails, and of course the amazing one. I have to find out what it was yesterday. But there are lots of butterflies coming out. So slow down out there on the road and let those butterflies pass on by on that lilting wind of spring. So great work, Emily. Moving on to some more cutting-edge information news, bringing it together. So many things out there going on that are just amazing. And, you know, sometimes you're inspired and sometimes it's like, all right already and enough time. Great. Glad to see it. It's about time. Thanks to General Mills. Yes, guess what they're doing? They're starting to use GMO labeling nationwide. And guess why? Guess why? Is it because they're such an awesome company and they just want it labeled for us because we want it labeled? No. The reason they're labeling their GMO ingredients is because Vermont's labeling law is looming. And they're not going to be able to have their products in the state of Vermont unless they comply with the law that GMOs must be labeled. And, you know, the state fought legal battles to be able to have the right to even make that law, because that law has been attempted to be usurped. Not that law, but that whole right of labeling GMOs has been, you know, attacked by all these companies who don't want to label their products as having GMOs in them. And so they have tons of lawsuits that go on. The Dark Act, of course, all this stuff with trying to make it where states cannot even make their own labeling laws. I mean, this is all going on, but bravo to Vermont. And of course, Bernie Sanders, former Vermont governor there and now Senator Bernie Sanders out there hammering it down. He's just got three more states. And of course, we're having official voter fraud being declared in the Arizona primary that already happened. So we'll see how that turns out. But Vermont fought for the right to label GMOs and they finally got it, and it's going to be happening. And now, because that law is coming into effect, the company said it will need to find a cost-effective solution. They said they will begin labeling products nationwide that contain GMO ingredients. This is a watershed development, according to one consumer group. Golden Valley-based General Mills said that they will be forced by July 1st to begin labeling for GMOs in Vermont. That result of a state law there will extend GMO labeling nationwide. Earlier this week, the U.S. Senate failed to advance a bill that would have outlawed states from passing laws that require GMO labeling on packaged foods. So in other words, saying states, you can't make a labeling law. So that's like taking away states' rights and people's right to have labels, which is, you know, not how it should be. But anyway, the defeat was a blow to the food industry, which has opposed national and state laws requiring GMO labeling. They said, we can't label our products for only one state without significantly driving up costs for our consumers, and we simply won't do that, said Jeff Harmening, head of General Mills, U.S. Retail Operations. This was in a post on a company blog. The result, consumers all over the country will soon begin seeing words legislated by the state of Vermont on the labels of many of their favorite General Mills food products. So, labeling for GMO ingredients has been a very contentious topic. For many years now, the food industry claims the labels are unnecessary because the GMOs were long ago approved by federal food safety regulators, but we don't really have long-term testing that we can say that they're safe, and we have a lot of evidence that shows that they're not safe. So a growing number of consumers have been suspect of GMOs nonetheless, and GMO labeling proponents say they have a right to know what's in their food. So this watershed moment is looking for more transparency. And, you know, I know they didn't do it because they just thought it'd be a great idea to do what people wanted them to do, but they're doing it now, and great job, General Mills. So good to see that. You have to understand, you know, it used to be GMOs were very rare out there in the food supply. Now, most corn, soybeans, and sugar beets, 100% of sugar beets produced in the U.S. are grown from genetically modified seeds. Supermarkets are filled with thousands of products containing ingredients that are qualified as GMO-derived. So they're going to also add a search tool on their website, ask.generalmills.com, to provide GMO ingredient information for hundreds of U.S. products. So they're going to be a leader now. And you know what? I'm proud of that. Because people drag their feet forever, right? Until they know it's inevitable. And instead of kicking and screaming all the way to the truth, General Mills says, you know what? No one's going to be the industry leader. Let's go for it. Let's provide a tool even to search everybody else. Let's go for it. Let's be a leader. And that's what it takes. Now, if we can just see more organic ingredients and more healthy ingredients and less unhealthy ingredients and less GMOs in general, and then get rid of them because people don't want them, that would be great. But wonderful to see, and bravo to a company that is deciding to be a leader in the GMO labeling of food products. So now they are basking in the approval of GMO labeling advocates. It's looking kind of positive for them. It's a great decision for them to be a leader on this. This is from Heather Fleisland, director of the labeling group Right to Know, Minnesota. So making great headway there with a huge company with lots of brand names. So, you know, get educated. It's a good thing. They're helping people get educated on just what's going on with GMOs. And, of course, the best alternative, always eat organic. Just choose organic. And if it's an issue of saying, well, I don't really, you know, I can't really afford all organic food, well, then grow more food, and then you'll save money by growing some organically. And it'll be better for you because you cultivate it there at home with things you know are positive and good, organic stuff in your garden, and your own love and your input. That makes all the difference. And the next best thing you can also do, right, is shop from your local farmers. We have farmers markets coming out and lots of different things happening. We've got asparagus in our local markets. We've got all kinds of things coming in. It's going to be good. There's going to be more and more at the markets as we come along. But though it usually isn't available until April, asparagus came in early this year. And you can get that right now at McConnell Farms and the YMCA Indoor Winter Market over here, as well as Asheville City Market and the North Asheville Tailgate Market. So we've got markets opening up. Also, apples at market now were harvested last fall, but they're still quite fresh and delicious as they stored well. Creisman Farms has those. There's also aquaponics. Sunburst Chef and Farmer is out there. Farms going on. New Moon Herbs, Farm in the Sky. They've got all kinds of greens and aquaculture, fish, salads, lettuce mix. Lots of things going on at the indoor winter market. Artisan products as well. Cheeses and brick oven made bread, as well as really great other handmade cheeses from other farms in the area. So you've got a whole directory, 2016 Winter Farmers Markets, and the new ones opening up there at asapconnections.org. You can find out what markets are open, what is going on, all the latest things each week at fromhere.org, and it's all from Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project. So get out there and get back into the swing of the market season. Farm Tour, of course, coming up this year. It is going to be June 25th and 26th. Okay, so they've moved the Farm Tour back. Just saw that. That was like a news flash right there. They've got that going. We're going to have that instead of the fall. The last couple of years, it's been during the fall. And before, it had been earlier in the season. So now it's going to be back in June 25th and 26th. And look forward to that. And always love to be out there and be part of the Farm Tour and visit local farms, getting up there, seeing what's going on. And it's so inspiring to see different kinds of farms because, you know, it's fun to go out to farms for me. I just have this thing for it. I just love farms. And when you see all the different environments and all the different ways people are doing things, it's so inspiring and gets that innovation going in your mind, thinking about stuff. And then also helping to share information with folks that like to maybe learn about more farming information. Of course, we do that all the time. So great thing to check out, asapconnections.org. You can check out the Farm Tour and everything coming up this year with Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project. Always a great source to also be connected to here in this area. You know, in the world, from the great to small, we've talked about the mega flora and fauna that were part of the Earth's environment, the huge herds of things like mastodon and, you know, more elephants and millions more buffalo and many more wildebeest and all of the great herds of the Earth and the overfishing of the oceans, taking out the large number of fish and whales and mammals and dolphins and all of that, and then the cutting of so many of trees and loss of wildlife, basically, and devastating things that have happened, things, you know, that have devastated ecosystems due both to our own destruction and our interaction with them, things that we brought blight, like the American chestnut blight here. And we just have a lot less wildlife and a lot less megafauna and megaflora. And we discussed this gap, right, the gap of manure and how important it is to have manure deposited on the earth to help build soil life. And we basically have what some scientists call a poop gap. Now, that just sounds so funny, but it's true. We were missing millions of tons of manure. And, you know, we don't have a whole lot of these megafauna left. We have vanishing creatures like elephants. And in this great cycle of the land-to-mouth food farm, gardening connection of the earth and of fertility of the soil and the animals and plants and sun and light and all of that coming together, we want to be preserving and protecting what is left of the great web of nature and wildlife that exists. And that includes somebody I'd like to speak up for right now. And it's one of those connections we just have to make, and that's for an elephant. Yes, elephants around the world are quite endangered, as are thousands of other species due to our mismanagement of the Earth's resources and not sharing it enough with these creatures. And one of the elephants I'd like to mention right now, and thanks to RainforestActionNetwork.org, is the Sumatran elephant. The Sumatran elephant is quite endangered in Indonesia. They're in a lot of trouble. They're critically endangered. These majestic elephants could be wiped out if we don't act very soon. Massive industrial development for palm oil and paper plantations are destroying their habitat. 6.5 million acres of the Loiser ecosystem. We can take action now. I'd like to be able to speak up for animals like elephants and whales and dolphins and hummingbirds and everybody that doesn't get out there and do social media or talk to people or have radio shows and stuff like that. So, Sumatran elephant, one of the megafauna creatures out there who still graces this earth. And I would encourage you to go over to RAN.org. That's Rainforest Action Network, RAN.org/Sumatran_elephant_in_crisis. Okay, so look that up, RAN.org, Rainforest Action Network, stepping up for rainforests around the world and the great endangered Sumatran elephant. I really like elephants. I think they're wonderful. I've been around them, unfortunately, in circus environments. I've never seen an elephant in the wild, but I always loved them. I always love them. They just look at you with the deepest soul ever, and they remember things. You know, they remember their loved ones. They are amazing, and they deserve a place here on Earth with us. You know, it'd be a really boring Earth if all we had was a bunch of humans, in my opinion. I think I like biodiversity. I like nature. I like discovering new butterfly yesterday. I like seeing the hawk sitting up there in the tree. I like hearing the owl. I want to see the other butterflies flying around and the hummingbird come. You know, I don't want to just have a bunch of humans and nothing else. Who could stand that, right? Nature is what heals us and keeps us in balance. And of course, being in with each other and celebrating that is how we stay in balance together. But certainly not one without the other. So today is March 30th. We are just about at the end of March in our first quarter of the year here in 2016. And in our biodynamic and lunar calendar for today, we look at the day. Of course, it's got all kinds of little things here. I found this new little website, rhythmofnature.net, and you can look up different lunar calendars, a lunar gardening calendar, the biodynamic calendar. In the lunar calendar today, we have, of course, our waning moon. It's a propitious time for plant development and good for planting strawberries. So if you want to get those, sometimes people do plants. I have this thing. I love starting everything from seed. So I'm starting a bunch of strawberries. And it's a great time for root crops as well. Today, we have the moon in Sagittarius. It is fire sign, which sometimes isn't the best for planting, but in general, they're saying root time, and we have the moon in Capricorn, and that's why it's okay, even though we have the moon going from Sagittarius into Capricorn. That's why it's a good planting day in the end, is because it is going to be going into that earth sign. So that is our lunar gardening calendar. And then in our biodynamic calendar, which is kind of fun because you can just click right over to that one, we've got strawberries, and carrots. And then for tomorrow, we're looking at carrots and flowers, and then more flowers, and then some leafy things here toward the end of the week. So nice to kind of get in touch with the rhythms of nature and be able to plant accordingly. And I've had some great experience with that. I've had some good experience. And of course, the more we plant, the more food there is out there for pollinators. Remember to really get those farmscaping plants pollinated. There is another devastating loss, I hate to tell you, of bees, and it's a direct relationship of what's going on. We had this happen just a few weeks ago in February, at the end of February. This from JBANews.com. 37 million bees, and we cannot afford losses like this. 37 million bees found dead after planting large GMO cornfield treated with neonicotinoid class of pesticides. This is our food supply, and these poisons are out there killing huge swaths of bees, millions of them dropping dead right after GMO corn was planted in Ontario, Canada. The local beekeeper, David Schuett, who produces honey in Elmwood, lost about 37 million bees, about 600 hives. It's our food supply. It's our ability to have healthy food. Bees are key to pollination and to this whole web of life in nature that pollinators share that help us sustain life. And you know, it's insane. We've got to ban these things. They're banning them in parts of Europe. Let's see the bans here. We hear from people like this beekeeper, Schuett. He said, once the corn started to get planted, our bees died by the millions. While many beekeepers blame neonicotinoids for colony collapse of bees, and many countries in the EU have banned neonicotinoid class of pesticides, the U.S. Department of Agriculture fails to ban insecticides known as neonicotinoids manufactured by Bayer Crop Science Incorporated. This is something that has got to stop. This is a clear cut. And what are we going to do? We have 100 million something acres here in America being planted with GMOs and all these pesticides just because people have sales contracts that they want to keep making money, poisoning the earth and the soil and killing our pollinators and endangering our food supply and our life on earth? No, it's not. Certainly not what we want to be doing. We've got to change direction on this right away. Nathan Carey, another local farmer, says that this spring he noticed there were not enough bees on his farm, and he believes that there is a strong correlation between the disappearance of bees and the insecticide use. New research shows that neonicotinoid pesticides kill honeybees by damaging their immune system. Studies published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences reveal that neonicotinoid pesticides kill honeybees by damaging their immune system and making them unable to fight diseases and bacteria, like the mites and parasitic type things that feed on them in a weakened state. The research team in Italy suggests that exposure to neonicotinoid pesticides results in increased levels of a protein in bees that prevents an important molecule involved in the immune system respond, making bees more susceptible to be attacked by harmful viruses. It deactivates the bee's immune system and ability to function. Why are we letting this be spewed everywhere? We've got to say no. Just say no to killing the earth and the bees and everything else, okay? Just say yes to life, right? Really be pro-life, all of life, the diversity of life, and get these things off the market. The findings of the leading author of the study, Francesco Pennacchio, and his colleagues show that millions of bees are dying because insecticides like these neonic pesticides are mainly suppressing the immune system of the bees. In fact, the research team discovered that a protein family similar to what was found in other animals is responsible for regulating the immune response in bees. The researchers found out that once bees are exposed to lethal doses of the neonicotinoid clothianidin, the leucine-rich repeat protein family known as LRR, can suppress the activity of a key protein involved in immune signaling called NFKB. So the immune signaling system gets deactivated in the bees. So we've got researchers infecting bees who were exposed to these pesticides with a common pathogen known as deformed wing virus. There was a significant increase in replication of the virus known to be common in bees, but it's kept under control by the bees' immune system. However, the bees exposed to the pesticides had little chance of survival since the insecticide suppresses the immune system of the bees. The reported effect on immunity exerted by neonicotinoids will allow additional toxicological tests to be defined to assess if chronic exposure of bees to sublethal doses of agrochemicals can also adversely affect their immune system and health conditions. And that is from team member Francesco Nazzi of the University of Udine. Moreover, their data indicates that the possible occurrence in insects, as in the vertebrates, of a neural modulation of the immune response. They're setting the stage for future studies in this area and posing the question on how neurotoxic substances are affecting their immune response. And, you know, things that affect other things affect us too. Just like when we're out there spraying Roundup on things and on wheat, and then everyone who's eating wheat thinks they're all of a sudden they're gluten intolerant and they're just having horrible gut problems and digestion problems from eating glyphosate, not gluten. They're glyphosate intolerant. We're pesticide intolerant. This stuff isn't safe for us. It's not like there's some magic wall that this food goes through and suddenly it's safe for us, right? None of it is. And the more we get rid of it, the healthier we get. So hats off to the EU countries that are getting a two-year ban going. They're implementing a two-year ban on the use of the toxic neonicotinoid insecticide, clothianidin, imidacloprid, and thiamethoxam. USDA once again fails to ban these toxic insecticides, but the EU is taking steps. And I'm so glad to see that. We were promised that GMOs would be helping the environment, feeding the poor and hungry, using less pesticides, all of that. It's all been not true. Not a bit of it. It's all worse in every way. So those things need to be banned as well. And, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in organic agriculture and doing things in a way that works with nature, not against it. And so we need to turn ourselves around in our agricultural model and stop being this unsustainable dead-end model. We need to have the life and health model that really encourages quality of life. So condolences there. My heart kind of sinks to know so much about all of those bees dying. It's really sad, but there's no need for it. We need to stop. We need to stop doing it. So let's get some bans going here in the United States. Let's have organic agriculture be our model. Let's stop chopping down all the forests so we can have amazing creatures like the Sumatran elephant now still with us and not off the earth. And also like awesome creatures in the forests of Indonesia, also like the great orangutan. The orangutan is also endangered. Greenpeace telling us over a quarter of Indonesia's forests have disappeared in the last 25 years. The needless destruction drives the conditions that fuel immense forest fires. And you know what? There's so much of this goes on for palm oil plantations. And you know what? I found out recently, palm oil is a polyunsaturated fat that isn't even the right kind of fat for our body. It's not even the right kind of fat to be eating to properly be able to metabolize and create the hormones to keep ourselves in balance. It's the wrong kind of fat anyway. We shouldn't even be eating that stuff. So we've got to have, you know, really looking at health from top to bottom here. And we've got big deforestation going on there. Brands like Johnson & Johnson, PepsiCo, and Colgate-Palmolive, who use palm oil, must stop hiding behind the promises and pledges and start delivering real change on the ground to protect the forest and prevent forest fires that are a major crisis for all the animals there. That we need some real commitments about this, real timelines in action, because it's direct activity of these companies that are causing these problems. Their palm oil policies are failing to stop deforestation in Indonesia. So we need forests, not fires, and end the deforestation. If you'd like to add your name to a letter to the CEOs of Johnson & Johnson, PepsiCo, and Colgate-Palmolive, you can do that. Check it out at Greenpeace Forests, Not Fires. And they've got that letter. You can personalize that and ask for action to please help protect the great creatures of the earth in our forest, because that's what makes our biosphere. That's what makes our air clean and healthy. You know, that is what makes our living biosphere able to function in the ecosystem around the planet. And even though there is an intrinsic and important relationship of animals to soil and the big manure gap, the big poop gap that we were talking about, and the need to have more soil enrichment by the animal's relationship and the manure that gets deposited, and how we're missing so many animals, and it's important to have that. But at the same time, we're getting encouraged more and more to eat less meat to avoid the dangerous global warming and less of that unsustainable model that is out there. Research led now by Oxford Martin School finds widespread adoption of vegetarian diet would cut food-related emissions by 63% and make people healthier too. So say you have a generally vegetarian diet with occasional meat, and then we're still integrating the animals. But doing that is the healthiest option. It's really a problem with the way that we are ranching cattle, the way that we raise cattle today. Livestock rearing is a major cause of greenhouse gases, in part because of the methane produced by the animals and also the conditions they're kept in. Thanks to Fiona Harvey of TheGuardian.com for the story talking about growing food for the world's burgeoning population is likely to send greenhouse gas emissions over the threshold of safety by far more of a margin than we would like. We've already just found out February was the hottest month on record here in the world ever for that time of year in history. And then we've got more and more of these unsustainable models being put in place for more need for food, when we really got to change our method and model. Because there are ways to work with regenerative ranching that will turn around the carbon dioxide question and the greenhouse gas question. But the way we're doing it now puts it through the roof in a completely unsustainable manner. And so it's quite urgent that we adopt these sustainable methods. And we can also, at the same time, cut meat consumption. We can cut meat consumption and still utilize herds for how we can use them to enrich the soil and for breeding our stock that we need to have in relationship to a sustainable system that we're in practice with. So basically, a bigger switch to more vegetarian eating would cut emissions by nearly two-thirds. In 3 decades, emissions related to agriculture and food production are likely to account for about half of the world's available carbon budget. The limited amount of carbon dioxide and its equivalents that can be poured into the atmosphere if we are to hold global warming to no more than 2 degrees Celsius. We are already just about at that mark. Right now, we just went up 1.5 degrees Celsius. We're just about over the threshold. We haven't even started. We haven't even started making the kind of urgent changes that are needed. So, it can be fun, even though it's urgent and needed. It still can be fun to change over to a sustainable system. Energy generation, transport, and buildings have long been a target for governments, businesses, and campaigners looking to reduce emissions. The impact from food production has often been left out. But on current trends, with intensive agriculture increasingly geared toward livestock, food production will be a major concern. It's going to be a much larger looming concern in the global climate conversation. The research led by scientists at the Oxford Martin School found that shifting to a mostly vegetarian diet or just cutting down will make a huge dent in greenhouse gas emissions. Food is our biggest choice that impacts the planet every day. Adhering to healthy guidelines for meat consumption will cut global food-related emissions a lot before 2050 by nearly a third. And that's just one thing. That just cutting down on that, not even counting if we cover up bare soils around the world with cover crops, get those seeds out there, start donating seeds to places where we need to be covering the soil, get that ground covered up, start sequestering more carbon, start producing more oxygen. That is another way to positively tip the balance toward sustainability for the climate conversation. Getting it out there. But cutting meat in our diet to a great extent helps a lot too. It's a big, big help both for our health and for the health of our atmosphere and our ability to live here on planet Earth in some kind of harmonious way. There's more benefits going further with the widespread adoption of more veganism that is going on. Some people that don't use any animal products, that is bringing a smaller incremental benefit, but that helps the emissions drop as well. Such steps also saves lives. Dr. Marco Springman, lead author of the study entitled Analysis and Valuation of the Health and Climate Change Co-Benefits of Dietary Change and published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, he says imbalanced diets, such as diets low in fruits and vegetables and high in red and processed meat, are responsible for the greatest health burden globally and in most regions, he said. At the same time, the food system is responsible currently for more than a quarter of all greenhouse gas emissions and therefore a major driver of climate change. So we've got over 5 million premature deaths that could be avoided globally by 2050 if health guidelines on meat consumption were followed more closely, keeping that meat in check, rising to more than 7 million with the vegetarian diet, and 8 million on veganism. These steps, if widely followed, could also reduce global healthcare costs by over $1 billion a year by mid-century. So the intensive use of raising livestock on mismanaged pastures is a major cause of greenhouse gas emissions. It's a massive amount of slurry pits, horrendous conditions, horribly inhumane conditions, and we've got that contaminating local water supply. We've got it so bad that when pilots tried to fly over to take a picture of these feedlots, they were arrested because companies didn't even want people to see what was going on. If we aren't even allowed to see where our food comes from, never mind being a healthy and and very connected relationship to it, that should tell you something right there. Oh, no, 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 don't look at it until it's on your plate. I mean, that ought to tell you a lot. So really, we've got to get into the huge, huge opportunity and importance of regenerative ranching and a whole new sustainable model for raising livestock. This is urgently needed as a big effector of the whole climate change conversation. It is diverting, the current model is diverting water and grains to animal rearing. They're not being even fed what they need to be fed. They're not being allowed to eat the grass and the plants that they would normally be eating. So the meat isn't even the quality it ought to be. It's less efficient than directing the grains toward direct human consumption. There's lots of ways to balance it out. So we've just got to change how we're doing it and do a whole different model and create a whole new conversation on what can we do to turn this around. Governments agreed at a landmark climate conference in Paris in December to hold global warming to no more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, with an aspiration of an even lower target. But now we're finding that we're getting dangerously close to that already. Linking health and climate change and challenging our eating habits could have more effect than focusing on all of the issues alone. If we combine the benefits, we get more of an impact. So the food choice is so important every day. And it's just, we forget how important it is. But when we remember how important it is and then we start doing it, we see the impact over time. We can share that with others. And it does make a huge difference. Makes a huge difference. I'd like to continue with some really cutting-edge stuff and interesting information. We've got all kinds of things going on. As I mentioned, the bees that died, 37 million bees dying right after a GMO planting happened in February there in Ontario, Canada. We've got an opportunity, another way for you to speak up for the bees. And this is regarding going ahead with that ban that we were talking about on the neonicotinoids. If you'd like to do that, you can go to someofus.org, S-U-M, yes, all of us, someofus.org, action neonics, okay? They have a neonicotinoid petition there that you can get involved with, that asking for the ban that we need, that it's wreaking havoc on our bees, and that we need the government to listen to us, not just these companies that are producing these pesticides. Hundreds of thousands of people across the country have already signed petitions to the UK governments to stop harming our bees, and the government is feeling the sting. They are feeling their need to respond. A massive public outcry could force these products off the market, and that's what we need. So check it out. Action, some of us, neonics there, someofus.org. We need to speak up for the bees and the birds and all of them. I love them all, don't you? And that's what makes the garden so delightful. And it makes it function. And even if we have remote ecosystems out there that are far, far away that we may never see in our entire life, the fact that they exist helps our biosphere function, helps keep the earth in balance. Having the wild herds and like the caribou in the Arctic, you know, we've got ice melting all over the Arctic and polar regions, tons of exposed land, and methane being released, and all of these things going on. And then, oh, that's an opportunity to drill for more oil so we can burn up more of the atmosphere. No, right? We need to continue the long, long-standing vigil for protecting America's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We've still got things going on. Big oil is still trying to push their way in. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is one of the world's most special places. That is why last year President Obama asked Congress to protect this area once and for all. But now that they've said, oh, we're not going to drill off the Atlantic, because there was a huge outcry by hundreds of communities over the entire eastern seaboard, then they said, oh, we're not going to drill out here, but we're going to go ahead and drill more out in the Gulf and probably more up in the Arctic. We don't need these dirty deal trade-offs, okay? We need to have a protected environment to keep the oil in the ground, to make a concerted, urgent effort to excitedly, economically grow clean, green, sustainable energy industries. We just have to stop doing the death spiral thing with the fossil fuels. We've just got to stop and turn it around. So let's do it. Let's do it. Big Oil and their allies in Congress have their sights set on the refuge for decades. They refuse to act. You can get your voice in for the Arctic here by signing the petition to tell Congress that the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is a treasure that belongs to all Americans and to the global biosphere, not to big oil. It's not up as an option. So you can check that one out at actmyngp.com, act.myngp.com. That's a great one for speaking up for the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, because we've got to be standing vigil for these places while they're still there, and not let them just be gone, because then that's more of destabilizing our planet. Every time we destroy an ecosystem, then we are destroying part of the balance of all life. We're destroying part of our quality of life. So I am really happy to see companies doing things that are needed. Long time overdue sometimes, but thank goodness. And countries, companies, people, individuals, communities taking steps. And France is one of those countries on the cutting edge when it comes to banning pesticides. They see what's going on. We have a worldwide bee death epidemic. A worldwide bee death epidemic that is due to pesticides and poison being spewed out there, in addition to all of the frequencies we've got going on and everything else, but mainly the pesticides. And this just out from yournewswire.com. Great to see this from Sean Adeltabatabai in News World. France is going to ban all pesticides amid worldwide bee death epidemic. France has announced plans to completely ban the use of pesticides due to unusually high bee deaths worldwide, which French authorities claim pesticides are responsible for. They're stepping up. People are pulling out from sitting in the back row saying nothing and jumping out there and being leaders, going ahead and being a leader and saying, you know what, let's do it. It makes sense. What are we waiting for? The bees are dying. This is not nice. We've got to stop it. This is urgent. Let's do something now. So lawmakers have approved plans to ban some of the most popular pesticide products on the market, going above and beyond European Union requirements. The EU limited the use of neonicotinoid pest chemicals produced by companies including Bayer, Crop Science, and Syngenta. We need to do that here, but they're doing it 2 years ago after research pointed to risk for bees, which play a crucial role in pollinating crops, of course. Crop chemical makers say the research blaming neonicotinoid pesticides isn't backed up, but of course that's the box guarding the hen house again. But we've watched it happen. We've watched the correlations happen. Global plunge in bee numbers in recent years, including the one we just mentioned earlier, 37 million bees back in February. This is not something that we want to be having going on. France says we're stopping it right here. The French outright ban on neonicotinoid pesticides was adopted by a narrow majority just recently by France's National Assembly as part of a draft bill on biodiversity that also contains an additional tax on palm oil. So they are taxing the rainforest destroying palm oil. They're getting rid of those pesticides. France is on the cutting edge, and I'm so happy to read that somebody out there is doing such great things as a country. The ban also needs to be approved by the French Senate, which rejected it in a previous reading, but it's coming up again, and the National Assembly here in the middle of the year, and let's see the progress. You know, let's see the progress, and let's have more countries doing it. And I'm so glad to see the steps being taken in Russia for organic food. They are protecting their people and doing things that are new and different there, and that's what we need, is more acres being cultivated organically and sustainably, and that model extending to all of our production, including the ever-critical livestock production area. So sustainable ranching is the way, and organic gardening, of course. Here to talk with us about it is Patrick Battle. How are you doing today, Pat? I cannot hear you yet. Smack that headset, Pat. I know last week we had the headset acting up. Go ahead. Pull on that headset. I don't know if you can hear me, but I can't hear you yet. Okay. Pat is having a little trouble coming on the air here today. We've got him on Skype, but I'm not able to hear him. Let me see if I can get him back on. Calling Patrick Battle for This Week in the Garden, seeing if we can get him this way, since I couldn't hear him a second ago. Chiming in here for Patrick Battle. Let's see if we can get him to answer. All right, Pat, are you there? Oh, man. All right, can't hear Pat. Don't know why, but We're trying to get him on the air. See if we can do this. Pull on that headset wire, replug it in, do something like that, maybe. All right. Well, I'm gonna have to continue on with the show. I'm gonna leave Pat on there, so that if he does start talking somehow, that we will hear him. But I'm gonna go on with the show because I can't just, you know, stop and try to get to hear him. So more great information out there about getting organic food is on the tables at your own home, sharing it with others. It's all out there. You can learn at livingwebfarms.org. You can learn from tons of other videos. And, you know, when you're out there farming and you're growing more food everywhere, you're sequestering carbon, you're covering that bare ground, you're enjoying the fruits of your labor and the wonderful things that grow in our gardens, we are carbon farming. And it's a new term that's being put forth, carbon farming, hope for a hot planet. And that's what we talk about a lot. But we've got a new article here from Modern Farmer talking about carbon farming. Thank you to Brian Barth for this new story. Carbon farming is a phrase that's suddenly on the lips of every major player in the sustainable food movement. We also we're calling it carbon capture gardening, John Nelson and I were talking about. But carbon farming is what is being now the coined phrase. Michael Pollan deemed it agriculture's secret weapon in a December op-ed for the Washington Post. Bill McKimmon, in his praise for an upcoming book on the topic, described carbon farming as a powerful vision, one that he hopes will presage a major change in our species' use of the land. Paul Hawken went so far as to call it the foundation of the future of civilization, with potential to surpass the productivity of industrial agriculture. And why all the hubbub? Well, what exactly is it about? Carbon farming is agriculture's answer to climate change. Simply put, the goal is to take excess carbon out of the atmosphere, where the element causes global warming, and store it in the soil, where carbon aids the growth of plants. Now, we talk about that all the time on this show, but guess what? It's really catching on. It's really catching on around the world, and I'm so glad to see this phrase being coined and people starting to talk about it, people like Paul Hawken, Bill McKibben, Michael Pollan, and many others. It's really getting out there that we have a real game changer here with organic farming and sustainable methods. It is the game changer. It's agriculture's answer to climate change. We're taking excess carbon out of the atmosphere, where the element causes global warming, and storing it in the soil, helping the plants grow. Straightforward principle. The practice varies, right? We have lots of ways of doing it. Most folks understand that burning fossil fuels puts carbon that was once buried deep beneath the earth into the atmosphere, turning the planet into a big greenhouse in the process, right? That's where we get that term. But in addition to petroleum underground, the soil on the surface of the earth contains a sizable store of carbon in the form of organic matter. And that's why we're moving toward more no-till methods to keep that world inside the soil intact. Environmentally aware farmers and gardeners are striving to maximize soil fertility by keeping it intact and whole and alive. Plants add organic matter to the soil. And when we can get that ground covered, as we talk about, and as Ray Archuleta says, nature is not a nudist. Cover it up. Nature is not a nudist. It's kind of funny and sounds funny, but it's true. Nature is out there covering things up. It's not bare. It's not bare ground. And it basically is our ability to keep covering stuff helps the atmosphere, helps sequester more carbon. Concern over climate change may have thrust the concept of carbon farming into the limelight now. 25 countries are pledging to pursue it during the December climate talks in Paris. We had commitments being made. Ranchers like Gay Brown, who raises livestock and an array of crops on 5,000 acres outside of Bismarck, North Dakota, have preached its virtues for decades. All soil biology eats carbon, and that's how nutrients cycle. And that is how it is explained by Brown of the network of microbes and fungi and earthworms underground. Farmers need to think more about carbon as their fertilizer because it drives a healthy system. At first glance, most carbon farming techniques mirror age-old organic methods. Instead of relying on chemical crutches and pulverizing the soil with constant tillage, it is enriched with compost and rotation of a diverse array of foods and cover crops through the fields each season. There is a wonderful description of this in the article here in Modern Farmer. It's a great way of looking at it, at really putting it together and giving a full-length article about this, including the five tenets of carbon sequestration. First of all, no-till. Tilling mixes the soil with the air, allowing carbon to oxidize back into the atmosphere. Instead, we need to focus on perennial crops that don't require tillage or use a no-till seed drill for large-scale annual plantings. The next tenet of carbon sequestration is organic mulch, covering the soil around small-scale plantings with a wood chip or straw mulch or fresh grass clippings or something like that, maybe some dried leaves to prevent those carbon losses. On large-scale plantings, leaving crop residue in place as mulch helps. As it decomposes, the residue fuels the carbon cycle in the soil. The third tenet of carbon sequestration is compost. Compost is rich in a stable, not easily oxidized form of carbon. Carbon farmers recommend dusting it over the surface of the soil. You can spread it directly over the grass in your pasture rather than tilling it in. And that's how nature does things. It just leaches down and it distributes the nourishment that way to the soil. The next tenet of carbon sequestration is livestock rotation, moving concentrated herds and flocks of animals through a series of small paddocks on a regular basis is preferable to letting the animals forage continuously over a single large area. Many awakening carbon farmers move their animals every day and several times a day, oftentimes, and try to let each paddock rest between grazings so it can be restored and sequester more carbon. The fifth tenet of carbon sequestration is cover crops. Fast-growing species such as clover and vetch keep the soil covered and enriched with carbon through the winter and may also be planted together with cash crops during the growing season to compensate for carbon lost when those crops are harvested. So it's so wonderful to see this article. It's much more lengthy and it really goes into a lot of the stuff that we talk about all the time on the show in regards to methods we utilize with Living Web Farms and all of the many workshop topics. This is a great article. I highly recommend you reading modernfarmer.com, and it is from March 2016, Carbon Farming. Carbon Farming, hope for a hot planet. That's what we always talk about. We talk about carbon farming. We call it carbon sequestration, carbon smart gardening. Just get that ground covered and get the green growing. Be green and growing in your life, in your love, in your heart opening, in your garden, flourishing. Green and growing, of biodiversity, of celebrating our communities together and gardening and sharing that delicious organic food and that wonderful community as we come together as earth stewards, doing our best every day. Every step in the right direction counts. Peaceful, powerful, positive steps. Let's finish today with the Earth Heart Pledge. I trust my heart. I know my truth. I live my passion to the fullest. I honor my connection to the world and everyone in it, in the spirit of love, living our values every day. Thanks for joining us today on Earth Heart Network Radio.